go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Broken interception.
Touchdown, Giants.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. I'm Paul Dottino. I'll be here for the next hour to take your phone calls as well as preview some of this season's Giants opponents. And today we'll be previewing games against the Washington Redskins and the Atlanta Falcons, two teams on the Giants 2015 schedule. If you'd like to hit us up, there's always the opportunity to go to Twitter or give us a call at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. 4513. It's hashtag Giants Chat if you prefer to go electronically on the computer, or of course, at Giants WFAN on the Twitter handle. First things first, no information today regarding Jason Pierre-Paul. Another day has gone by. No statements to report to you. If something should come down the pike within the next hour while we're on the air, we promise to get that to you as soon as possible. In any event, 201-939-4513, again, our phone number to call. Now, the Giants have a very interesting schedule this season. As we've been talking about it through the course of the last couple of months, it will start off with a bunch of NFC teams, specifically the Redskins on, Cowboys on September 13th in week number one. The Dallas Cowboys will be part of tomorrow's show as Lance Meadow and John Schmelk will be previewing what's going down in the Big D. What we're going to do today is talk about opponents in weeks 2 and 3 of the Giants' regular season. That would be September 20th at home against the Atlanta Falcons and on September 24th at home against the Washington Redskins, a team who the Giants will then play down in the Capitol on November the 29th. Obviously, two divisional games. In any event, do we have Chris ready? We have Chris ready. Chris Dottino joins us from WCNN Radio down in Atlanta, an Atlanta Falcons insider for many, many years. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your participation on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Well, look forward to it. Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks.
All right, so now the Giants and Falcons are going to play in week two of the regular season, and you know, coming into this season, I don't know what the Falcons fans are talking about more. Their offense or their defense, clearly they need trouble. They need help in the running game, which had a lot of trouble last year. They obviously had a lot of difficulties in all areas of defense. In your mind, what is the biggest priority that the Falcons have to deal with as they go to training camp in the next month?
Down and distance. And, you know, I was one of those guys who got caught up a few years ago and looking at third down percentages. What did you complete and what did you give up? And I realized, okay, that's not really the right number to be looking at. What you really have to look at is how far on offense you are from picking up a first down on third down, and how far or how close on defense are you to giving up another first down. First and second down was death for this team.
Right.
And they had no shot to actually stop people on third down. Drives keep moving. They really didn't have enough of an arsenal to pick up enough yards on first and second when the whole playbook was open. So I honestly believe, look, I can give you a unit. I can tell you the defensive line. I haven't hit a quarterback in 5 years, or at least consistently. I can, you know, linebacker core. Who were these guys just signed up? It looks like they, you know, came off a heap. I don't want to do it. I'm telling you, down a distance, they've got to be much better in first and second down. Or else they're not going to A, get off the field, and B, they're not going to actually be able to sustain drives.
Well, let me say this. I think anybody who follows the game knows that down and distance is really a byproduct of being able to run the ball effectively and being able to stop it on the other side of the ball. And between Coleman and Freeman and Smith, I know the Falcons think they're going to be able to run it better
right.
This year. Is that how you see it?
Well, I've never seen more words written about a guy in this town than Devontae Freeman. And we don't know what he can do. And everybody keeps saying, okay, what is he? He keeps talking about being an every down back. They're pushing the idea that he can be an every down back. But really, he's sort of an enigma. And it's not that he's supposed to have a long body of work, or I'm not supposed to know everything about him. But I didn't really find out enough about him last year to find out what he might be. The Jacquizz Rodgers thing, it came and went. That was supposed to be your home run guy and a guy that can score from 40 out.
Right.
We never really saw it. It was never consistent. So now Freeman, they think, is a better version of that. Can he chip block enough to stay on the field when Ryan wants to throw? Can he get in and out of some things with him now in his second year? You're supposed to be able to be better at that. My problem was Steven Jackson came a few years too late, and the offensive line has been in flux. And they tried going bigger. Like, that was the whole thing a year ago. You saw it on Hard Knocks. We're going to be bigger. We're going to be bigger. We're going to be bigger. Well, just because a guy is taller, a guy weighs more, doesn't mean he's a better football player. So that didn't work. You bring in Shanahan, and now all of a sudden it's not about big, fat offensive linemen. This guy's going to roll out. So your offensive line is changing again. In space, can Matt Ryan throw it? Do you really want him outside of the pocket, maybe as much as they're going to ask him to be? And at the end of the day, is Freeman enough of a counter guy, not only when he runs it, but can you actually counter, play fake with him, because he is enough to give Matt Ryan a little bit more time and make his job easier?
You just mentioned a guy who I want to ask you about next, and that is quarterback Matt Ryan, who has a great record when he's home, not so great when he's on the road, especially in big games. How much has he been affected over the last couple of years by the sporadic and inconsistent running game? Is he the kind of guy who can be an elite quarterback in this game again, given what the Falcons have done around him?
First, let's say this. You know, the whole idea of who and what he is, he's a tough SOB. This guy has gotten bounced. He's been on his back. This guy gets up, and he just plays 16 games a year. And the one time that he was hurt, he had a turf toe. He played in a game that didn't mean anything, and he won that football game. So it's never been that. He spins it better than probably ever has. I think he's a little bit stronger now, and I think that's kind of a part of it. His body is sort of built to not take a beating. They want him to get rid of it quickly. The problem now is with Julio Jones, I got a deep threat. I got to give this guy enough time. And I read all these lists. Is he a top 10? Is he a top 12? Is he 7? I don't know. I think those things sort of, we just get caught up in trying to figure out where a guy is slotted and where a guy actually falls in the course of a season. And it's fluid. Like, my thing with him is it's fluid, but he's 30 years old. And you've won 10 games in your last 2 years.
Right.
So quarterback gets too much praise when you win and too much bang when you lose.
Hey, we know that in New York too, Chris.
He's in a bang period. Yeah. Yeah, he's in a bang period. He's in the time when it's a little easy to say, why does he not make guys around him good enough? Why does he not make his defense better by doing this or doing that? He's got skills, and I know he'll make the smart play. The question now is how much can you get him in no huddle, which is what I think he does best. And how many times can you actually let him settle in 5 and 7 steps back and let him throw the football? I'm not telling you that quarterbacks are blameless, but I do know if you can't run everything in your playbook because of down and distance and because you can't get enough protection, you're never going to find out what your playbook looks like at its best. I think he's been a little bit prone to having that fall on him.
Well, before we get away from the offense, I've got to then ask you about that offensive line, because we all know what a big part of everything that is. And quite honestly, when I saw Blaylock come free and then he retired, I was surprised. Is that a big blow to them?
Big blow is a little bit strong. Look, he's a serviceable guy, and he knows what he's doing, and he shows up and he plays. So if you know, grunt or grinder guys, that's fine. I want a little bit better than that. I think you need to be a little bit more talented than that. I think you need to actually have to have a little bit more flexibility with your line, whether it's in numbers or whether it's what these guys can do. You know, when Shanahan came, look, you know, whether he saw his dad when he saw it, I think they think that running backs, I can scheme them to 1,000 yards. And 1,000 yards isn't overly impressive. It's just enough time, and it's enough yards to maybe keep some pressure off the quarterback. That would be fine. But we all knew that fat guys need not apply. If you can't kick it out or you can't pick up tempo, then you can't be on this type of offensive line.
Right.
I think Sam Baker has been a disappointment. I think when you had James Stone, an undrafted guy, who, by the way, played pretty damn well at center, I think you go, do you want to play the glasses half full or the glasses half empty? Because I just had an undrafted guy play as well as any center I've had since Tom McCourt. And look, they used to be Edgar, Clavo, you know, McCourt, Harvey Dahl.
Sure.
That group, you know, if there's a shadow of a whistle, those guys played to it. I don't think this team is nasty enough. My problem with them over the last year, Paul, is this. I watched them get beat by Carolina a couple of years ago, and it was the last game of the year. Matt Ryan, this is, you look it up. He got sacked 9 times. He got his knee rolled. Harry Douglas got bench pressed out of bounds and throw down. Tony Gonzalez got hit out of bounds for penalty. There was not one retaliation move. I don't like cheap shots, but there is no way on God's green earth that somebody's on Carolina shouldn't have been knocked the hell over. And all 15 yards are not created equally. And I called the GM on the way home from that game that night, and I said, look, the record was bad enough. I got a bigger problem with the idea that I think you guys got punched in the mouth and you did nothing about it. So that's your reputation. That's when I played the tougher, stronger. still want them to be the type of team that when you practice for them, you have a hard time because you know they're going to punch you. And the week after you play them, and this is the one with Dan Quinn and I had a discussion about, the week after you play the Falcons, the week after you play a good physical team, you're not supposed to be as good. Teams after they played the Falcons were much better than they should have been 7 days after playing an NFL game.
Hmm. Interesting comment there from Chris Domino, Atlanta Falcons insider, WCNN Radio. You know, when you talk about physical, you talk about defense a lot of times too, Chris. And, you know, Osei Emenyiora was down there, former Giant for a while. I'm just going to begin, before I ask you about the Falcons that are currently there, let me just ask you about Osei. He got a little bit lost in the shuffle here in New York after he wound up going down to Atlanta. They moved him to linebacker. I saw they changed his number, and they put him in the 50s, which was just nauseating to anybody who knew Osei when he was number 72 for the Giants. Give me a little taste about what you saw from him. And right now he's a free agent. Does he have anything left?
You know, it's a good question. Both of them, actually. Here's the thing. I don't want to call him Steven Jackson where you absolutely got him too late. But I do think there was that, oh, where was the guy that we thought we were getting down here? You didn't pay him a ton of money. You know, you made an emotional investment. You really made a positional investment. Then all of a sudden you tried. Mike Nolan, look, you can say what you want about Mike Nolan. He was not working with Pro Bowlers to the left and Pro Bowlers to the right. They had to trick it up a little bit, and one of the things they thought they could do was move him around. I would have liked to have seen him. Maybe he just didn't have it in him. I would have liked to have seen the guy who just had one job. See that guy? He's the quarterback. Go hit him and make his life miserable. And it goes back to, and if you hit him as he's releasing or a tick after, fantastic. Let's hope he doesn't play as well in the second half after shots like that. We didn't see it enough here. We just didn't see it enough here. I don't know if it was a scheme. I don't know if it was him. I don't know if it was age. I don't know if it was want. But we never saw the guy that you honestly knew you needed but didn't really exist down here. And he's not the only one. Like I said, the biggest problem for this team has really been knocking down quarterbacks or people behind the line of scrimmage.
You know, he got his snap number reduced a lot last year, and he was also doing a whole bunch of that stand-up stuff. So I guess what I'm asking you now is, because you know the JPP right now with the Giants is unsigned, and there are Giants fans who are clamoring to the show who are saying, well, maybe they should give Osei a look. So my question to you, and it's a hard one to answer, is it that there's nothing left in the tank, or is it possibly the scheme, the system, how he was used, few snaps that he was used? Can you get a gauge on it?
Yeah, I would say a look. Oh, hell, I'll bring a guy in for a look. And if a guy tells me he'd like another year on his pension and he likes an NFL salary and a life and he can take a little bit of a beating now that he's got some money in the bank, I don't think it's a problem at all. As a matter of fact, if that wasn't a bad relationship, I would ask him, hey, look, we're not doing this totally as a sentimental thing. We think, because we might not be as deep as we thought, do you want to? And by the way, I don't even know if you heard anything about his want to actually play this year, because I haven't.
Yeah, I believe that Osei would like to play one more year, but you know, at this point, his phone's not ringing real heavy. You know,
the condition is this: if you can, and by the way, I need to see it in preseason. I'm not keeping you on my full-blown big boy roster. You have to work in preseason as if you need a job. And if you don't really believe that you're supposed to be that type of guy, then I'm not bringing you in. If you understand the preseason is for you to make this team, I'd give him a look at what it would cost.
All right, so then give me a surveillance of the Falcons' defense as it stands now, because as you said, and we all know, they didn't get to the quarterback enough. And if you don't get quarterback pressure and you don't really stop the run well, you don't have much of a defense, period.
You know, this whole bend but don't break everybody talks about, oh, look, here's what you got to do. If you need to trick it up, you don't have enough talent. If you can play it a little bit straight, if you have guys who can bump receivers at the line of scrimmage, and then lo and behold, a couple of guys end up on the other side of the line of scrimmage on both pass plays and run plays, now you have something. Well, the Falcons didn't have that. If your best player is a DB in Trufant, and I think he is, if your second best player is the want and hope of Vic Beasley, you know, there's good news in that, and there's bad news in that. No guy coming out has not played a snap in the NFL is supposed to be maybe your second best player on any side of the football, and he might be.
Yeah.
That means you don't have enough talent, and that's the reality. Dan Quinn walks in a room with a Super Bowl ring and another Super Bowl appearance. I love the hire, really in part because he was also at Florida just a few years ago, coaching college guys. And I think he understands, and I've been up to some of their work, some of their OTAs and their mini camp. In college, you have to get on and off the field quicker. You just have a certain amount of hours. You're not allowed to be there all day.
Sure.
Quinn has told these guys, we get our work done, you get to leave. If you can pick up what we're doing from the board, take it out on the field, we leave. We're not going to beat in terms of hours, but you guys have to do your work. There's a mentality there that I think is going to be a good one going forward, especially when it's hot in August. preseason games are going to matter because he has no emotional investment in any of these guys. He can tell me how much he loves a guy on tape, and he can tell me how much he loves a guy's, you know, where he went to school and his 2 and 3 years in the league. Nonsense. You want snaps, go earn them. I think preseason is going to matter for him and his entire staff. Now the last part is, do you have enough talent to push over the line of scrimmage, and do you have enough talent at linebacker to actually ensure that your DBs get a little bit of help in terms of coverage? He wants guys who swarm. And I'm going to tell you, Paul, the biggest thing that I got out of it, this league is too fast to play read and react if you don't have a lot of talent.
Oh, tell me about it.
You got to react. Get you and three of your buddies, go find a guy with the football and knock him down. We'll figure out if you actually grade it out well after the game, not necessarily during it.
Yeah, you have to be intuitive. You have to anticipate. You have to be instinctive. The read and react stuff went out years and years and years ago when Rod Rust was a defensive coordinator, and that's going back quite a ways. Hey,
I just think you get burned more than you don't. Know what your assignment is. Look, don't play hero ball, but you can actually have a little high school Harry in you. If you smell it, better be right. But if you smell it, go attack. And really,
absolutely,
the big thing with Quinn is, let's see if we can get three guys at the football.
So then, final question for you, and again, Chris Domino, Atlanta Falcons insider from WCNN Radio, we really appreciate you taking the time. Final question then, and it kind of envelopes the entire new coaching atmosphere that Quinn is trying to instill. The Giants will play the Falcons in week 2 of the regular season up here at MetLife Stadium. It sounds from everything that you're saying that the Falcons are going to take some time to try to get this thing sorted out. And maybe it's a good thing for the Giants to catch them in week 2 because they may not be clicking on all cylinders. Or am I seeing this wrong? And is Dan Quinn's breath of fresh air and new blood and guys,
yeah,
you better go out there and prove it to me, is that to the Falcons' advantage to play the Giants in week 2?
You know, I'm not a Pollyanna. I did the pre- and post-game show for years, and some of those years they were 4-12. And I don't wave pom-poms, and it's not my job to sell your tickets, and personal relationships are personal relationships. They're not business. What I think what's going to happen is, I really believe this in my heart of hearts, Quinn and the staff he has assembled, it's going to be the, and this is a fact, for the last 10 years in the NFL, 6 teams were in the postseason last year and not going back to the postseason. That's just the way it is. The numbers tell you that. We're going to be one of the ones who get back in, but there's no giveaways. There's no giveaways. Don't tell me December's different than September, because it's not, especially with this regime. And I also think that guys who want snaps, and whether it's to make more money or have personal pride, I think the beginning of the year, because it's not an overly complicated offense or overly complicated defense, I don't think they really need time. Like everybody says, oh, basketball teams, what do you need, 25 or 30 games to actually figure out who and where everybody wants and what they're good at? Uh-uh. I think this camp and this preseason is going to be run as we will know that hitting the ground. No excuses, no alibis. And I like the mindset. Now, it's only a mindset, and talent eventually wins out. But I think you can mask it a little bit with a little bit more of, I think, what's going to happen in August here. I think there's going to be a little bit more vocal leadership, whether it's player-driven, whether it's Quinn and his staff. You know, Raheem Morris is a pain in the ass to be around, in a good way, I hope. Brian Cox is a pain in the ass to be around, in a good way.
Yeah.
I like what they're going to do on that side of the football, because I swear to you, and Terry Robiskie, the guy who's been there maybe the longest now on that staff,
He
doesn't suffer any fools.
Right.
I don't think you got an alibi and excuse to tell me we might need September to gel. I think advantage happens in that regard.
Great stuff. Chris Domino, Atlanta Falcons insider from WCNN Radio. Look forward to talking to you when the Falcons do come in to play the Giants that week. We appreciate your time right now for joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Stay well, Chris.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
All right, so there you have it from the Falcons insider, a team the Giants will play in week 2 of the regular season, a team that's certainly in flux, a team that has a lot of question marks on both sides of the ball, and we didn't even get the special teams. But a team that, because of how Chris just said, has a new coaching regime and is really jacked up about it, and they're trying to prove themselves to this new coach, a team that he thinks would probably be better off to compete in week 2 against the Giants as opposed to the other way around. Coming up at 12:45, we will preview the Giants division rivals, the Washington Redskins, with radio voice Larry Michael, who handles Redskins games and has for quite a long time. He's a real good announcer and a hell of a football guy. Looking forward to talking to Larry at 12:45 as we preview the Redskins. But for now, we go to your phone calls at 201-939-4513 here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Also, hashtag Giants Chat if you want to hit us up on Twitter. My handle is at Giants WFAN. Let's go to the phone calls. First one up, Dre, you're from Atlanta, and you're number one on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
What's going on, P-Dot? How's it going?
Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm all right. Well, let me preface my comment. First, I wish JPP all the best. I hope he got a speedy recovery.
So does everybody else.
Right. But with that being said, I'm kind of disturbed by the decision-making. If you're sitting down there waiting for a big payday, I could care less if he's ready to play all week one and he just lucked out. Just I'm looking at the decision-making. You know, you make enough money to hire somebody to do a fireworks display for your family, but to purposely, you know, not purpose, but to take it upon yourself to light a fireworks, which is unpredictable. They have a mind of their own, you know. To take that chance and ruin your payday and actually almost ruin your life, I look into that decision-making. You know, I don't take too much of the $60 million come off the table because he didn't want it anyway. But it's one of those things where, you know, we talk about the Roger Moore's, you know, maturity, you know, and growing up.
Dre, you're one of our regulars, and I appreciate that you call in all the time, and you always have something to add to the program. The only thing I would say to you now is that none of us know anything.
Right.
And quite frankly, until the Giants come back and tell us what they have found out, there's nothing to say. And quite frankly, I don't know what the circumstances are and what happened. So
I'm not fair.
I'm just talking about the
action of the, you know, him getting hurt in that fashion, whether it was a splinter or a stubbed toe. I'm looking at this decision making.
I appreciate your concern, and I'm sure that every Giants fan is equally concerned and hoping for the best.
Last question.
Yes.
I read your, you know, Twitter about, you know, Cruz going on a pup list.
Hmm?
Jeremy Davis.
No one's saying that Cruz is going to the pup list. What I had said earlier in the offseason
is that he doesn't know yet if he passes his physical.
I will tell you, Jay, he's selling me on the fact that he's got a real chance to make it for opening day. He has looked so good during the OTAs and the minicamp. I'm thinking that Cruz has a real chance to make that Cowboys game now. I was not so much a believer earlier in the offseason because, look, the serious knee surgery he had last October was nasty stuff. And I know the Giants are going to err on the side of caution because they want him for the long term, not just for a month. They want him for the whole season. They want him for his whole career. So I know they're going to be conservative. So, Dre, let me, again, make this clear. It was my opinion that there'd probably be a better chance than not that he would start on pup. Cruz is really making me change my mind, though, after what I've seen in the mini camps. He looks so good.
From Jeremy Davis.
Okay, go ahead. Jeremy Davis, what do you got? You like him?
I like him.
You should.
I like his upside.
You should. I like him, too. The Giants actually thought about taking him in the fifth round and wound up taking him in the sixth when he fell down to them that extra round. He's strong. He's got a very good football mentality. He's eager, very willing to learn, wants to play specials. Physically, he is very, very solid. He's tough, like over the middle, fearless. He's got good hands. I like the way he attacks the ball and catches the ball. There's a lot to like there. But I will tell you, the reason that a guy's not drafted in the first or second round, as you know, there's always going to be some questions. His question mark is speed. Doesn't have great speed. Doesn't have, you know, that huge jump in acceleration that he's just going to scoop by people like the Flash. But on the other side of that coin, there are a lot of guys who have made a living in this league that were not track stars, as you know. So that's not necessarily to say he can't make it, because I'll be honest with you. I got him on my 53, but that's just me.
I got him on mine also. That's just mine. But thanks for taking my call, P-Dot.
Hey, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it, Trey. Let's go back to the phones. Andrew from Stanhope, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, Paul. Speaking of injuries and Cruz, that's great news. And I think JPP is a wake-up call. And hopefully he'll be a more mature veteran player. I just read an article about Justin Pugh and how he's in his third year, and he's focused and mature. So hopefully that'll be a positive, you know, wake-up call for JPP. On the injury front, I know how good Dallas is and their offense, and Romo's, you know, pretty master, you know, wizard. Like, he reminds me of Roger Staubach a little bit.
Oh, no, 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 no. Staubach got jewelry. Tony Romo got nothing.
And Staubach, I think, was smarter and more of a clutch player. I think he was more intelligent and more poised than Romo.
Sure.
But Eli has been much more durable than Romo, and Romo's a little bit older than Eli. So I think the Giants have that advantage that Eli is more likely to be healthy, and it's year two in the new system, and he's got Beckham. So I'm optimistic because I think, Romo, it's like a higher percentage that he's going to miss games or get knocked out. That's why it would be great if the Giants could win the first game against Dallas, because if they could win that game, then I'm thinking, like, the next game, Romo might not even be in the lineup.
First of all, don't talk about percentages of injuries and how you hope or want somebody to get hurt anywhere in this league.
I don't advocate that.
Yeah, I don't advocate that at all. I want every player to be healthy all the time because I love the game. I love the NFL, and I think it's best for the league when everybody can play. But I will say this to you, Andrew. There's no doubt that over the last 5 years, when you look at the durability of Eli compared to Tony Romo, Eli's had much better durability. And as guys reach their mid-30s, as these quarterbacks are, that becomes more and more of an issue. So I would say yes. I would think, even though Dallas has a better offensive line than the Giants, that Eli's durability history works in his favor. I would agree with you.
I definitely don't wish an injury on anyone. It's just the history of Romo and the percentages of being the most injured team. Last year we had the most injuries.
Last 2 years the Giants had the most injuries.
Yep. And just by the odds, you know, I can't say you can't count your chickens before they're hatched. But just the odds of that happening again is not likely. So I'm optimistic that we're not going to have so many injuries. And, I'm excited Beckham, Cruz together. So I'll leave it at that. And I like Romo. Like, I like when they play Romo or Michael Vick, more exciting. But if they could win early, I know they went to the Super Bowl and they went 0-2, but if they could win early, I think that's massive. Like, if they could go, like, 2-0, that'll be huge. Towards the end of the season, they'll be in the hunt. But thanks for taking my call.
All right, Andrew. Thank you. Take care. The Giants will open up against Dallas, Atlanta, and Washington, three NFC opponents, of course, two of them coming from the NFC East. So there's little doubt. I mean, they need to hit the ground running, and Tom Coughlin knows that because the Giants cannot afford to get behind the eight ball because then you're going to have to be playing catch-up again. And, look, we've seen what happens when you try to play catch-up in this league. It is not a fun thing to do. Injuries usually pile up toward the end of the season, making it even more difficult to climb up to the top of the mountain. Let's go back to the phones. We have Derek, also from Atlanta. Second Atlanta call this morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, Paul, you rolling solo today?
I'm rolling solo today. How about that?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, the Giants, Cruz is medically cleared at for Dallas game. I don't think that they can afford to, ease him back. I think they just need to just go ahead and just, bring him out full bore. Like you said, this is the NFC East that they're, they got two games in the division to start the season with. They have to, this staff cannot go mediocre during the first part of the season. Because I think the second part of the season is kind of rough. And I think they need as many wins as they can get before the end of the season.
Perhaps
after the break.
Perhaps I should clarify, and I'll let you finish in one moment. Perhaps I should clarify. What I said, I thought they would bring Cruz along slowly and conservatively. What I'm suggesting was that during the offseason, they would be extremely careful, try to hold him back, which is truthfully what they've tried to do because he's very aggressive, to make sure that the progress was incremental and that by the time they got to wherever the medics would clear him, there's no question. Once they give him the green, you got to put him on the field and you got to let him ball. I mean,
right.
Believe me, I am not one who says, hey, you think he's okay? All right, let's put him into the game for 10 plays. I would never say that about a player. I've always been of the opinion that the doctor will give me the green when it's a green. I'm not interested in yellows. I'm interested in greens. When it's green, he plays and he's part of the game plan, and that's it. So I'm with you on that page, and if he can get the green going into the Dallas game, he starts and he plays and he's full go. So I'm with you, and I hope that happens, and I think there's a better chance of that happening now than I did 3 months ago.
John kind of mentioned yesterday this, and I would kind of literally expand on it. I know we can't really comment on what JPP is going through, but let's just say his hand that he plants in the ground is the one that's injured, and it would make sense for him to move to the other side so he can plant that hand into the ground. Is that something possible? Because I do think the Montre Moore natural side is the side that JPP is playing on. Is that a possibility, you think?
I would say that Steve Spagnuolo is probably in his playbook that he has already constructed. He's probably got JPP playing a whole bunch of different positions. Left, right, probably sliding inside to the middle a little bit too. So regardless of what the circumstances are with the defensive lineman today, I'm going to tell you, I think that Spags already has it in his mind to flip him and flop him and move him. And he's made it very clear that JPP is a huge linchpin to his defense. So I don't know that that's a major concern right now. I don't know that anything's changed in that regard. I think he's going to be very, very flexible as to where he plays.
I know it's early, but Double O, do you see him more as a right end or a left end?
Well, see, I think that George Selvey, who is a run-first stopper at defensive end,
I see him as a left.
He's more of a left, exactly. And see, that's why, to me, if you're just talking about placement of players, you know, we looked at Robert Ayers last year as a guy who was supposed to be a run-first defensive end, and then last year for the Giants, he became more of a pass-rush defensive end, and he was playing that left side where Tuck used to man. Now, Tuck was one of the most stout run-stopping defensive ends in recent memory. Selvey is more like a Tuck than what Ayers exhibited last year when he became more of a pass rusher. So right. to me, if I'm looking at a starting lineup and I'm thinking in this particular matchup, I've got to get run stopping first, or that's a strong power run team first, I'm thinking Selvey's going to get more snaps. And when he's in the game, he's going to be my left defensive end. And I'll line up JPP or Demontre Moore or Double O or whoever it's going to be on my right defensive end. That's what I would tend to think.
So do you really think that they're going to take snaps away from JPP if he's healthy? I mean, it just seems like a lot of people rotate on that left side.
Well, here's the thing. Do you remember what Spags did with the 2007 champions?
I remember Tug moved inside when he,
right.
Know.
And by the time the games were over, Tuck, OC, and Strahan all got about 45 snaps a game. Now, a typical NFL game, you'll get roughly 65 to maybe 70 snaps, unless you're playing the Philadelphia Eagles, and God only knows how many snaps you're going to wind up with by the time it's over. But typically, it's between 65 and 70 snaps in an average NFL game. And because these three guys were so special with Spags, he was able to rotate them and get them all about 45 apiece. And that was the goal. That was the game plan. That was the goal. They followed it, and it worked beautifully. What I'm going to say to you is,
I think
Spags has something similar in mind for these guys, even though they're not the same triumvirate.
My last comment is, I'm hoping that JPP will be open to doing some of that stuff that Tug did by moving inside on pass downs a little bit, because he's a good run stopper, but his pass rushing is not, you know, since that 1 year. And maybe let Demontre Moore take some of those snaps off the right side and move him to right next to Hankins, JPP right next to Hankins, and maybe get a couple of snaps out of him that way. And, you know, I'd like
Derek,
to see that this year.
I appreciate the phone call. And there's no question the Giants want to get heat on the quarterback, and they'd like to do it. out of that defensive front without having to send a lot of blitzers. So that means if guys like DeMontre Moore and Double O and Robert Ayers and whoever else up front can get consistent heat, you know Spags is going to lean on them a little bit more in the rotation, unless the matchup calls or the situation calls for run stopping first. You see, that's the one thing I will say about the Giants' defensive line. They've got a lot of numbers. They're very deep there, and they seem to have a bunch of guys who can do various things, whether it's the guys at the defensive tackle spot, now that they added the plugger in Kendrick Ellis, the free agent from the Jets, or you talk about the guys on the outside. They've gone now and added the additional pass rusher in Double O. So that's good. And they also added the run-stopping defensive lineman by signing Selvey away from the Cowboys. I like the numbers, and I like the different skill sets that they bring. And this is where it becomes a chess match for Spags in terms of, okay, what are the matchups, and who's getting the job done, and what are their strengths against the other team's strengths. So anyway, I don't think the number of snaps is as important as when the guy plays and against who he's playing, and then specifically in what situation is it. So that's my answer to the defensive line rotation. Quickly, I have a Twitter here from Joe, JSC, or JCS02008, says, does DeMontre Moore look more physically mature? Has he bulked up this offseason? Remember, DeMontre had a shoulder injury, and that certainly set him back some. It would have been great if he could have gone through the entire offseason program and done everything that they were hoping to get him to do so he could physically put on 10 or 15 more pounds of bulk. That's not the case. You know, he was set back by that. He also went back to school. Give him some credit for that. Thumbs up. Finished his education back in college, which is a wonderful thing. Did make it back here in time for the mini camp. Looks a little bit bigger, but I wouldn't say it's that noticeable, and it's that much solid bulk right now. I'm anxious to see him when he gets back in the next couple of weeks when they start training camp as to exactly what he's able to do out on the field and how much rust has been accumulated over the course of time. Randy from Virginia, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Holly D, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Great.
I know there's been a lot of questions about the D-line. I do have one kind of out of left field, and it's in regards to the fullback position. And, I know we have a guy who we've had for a couple years, but I was wondering about Jerome Cunningham. Has he shown any flashes at maybe like an H-back type of role, any run blocking skills, something that he could provide? Maybe that could be another position that he could kind of make his way onto a roster.
Well, Jerome Cunningham got quite a bit of compliments from Coach Coughlin coming out of the minicamp for his effort and for his ability to catch the ball. He certainly made the most of his opportunities in the receiving part of the game. We really can't tell you much about the rest of it because they're not in pads yet.
Right,
and I'm not trying to duck your question, but the truth of the matter is, until guys get the pads on in the next couple of weeks and actually go through a real training camp and go through preseason, it's really hard to judge the run-blocking part of a guy's game, the physical nature of, hey, does he really have the heart, the fire, the guts, and the determination to get nasty and sweaty and down and dirty and make it happen?
Certainly.
What I will tell you is he showed good hands, he ran good routes, he showed some athleticism. He's a guy that you want to keep an eye on, coming through the next month and a half, 2 months going into the regular season. But I can't give you any more than that. And I watch practice every day. But shorts and T-shirts doesn't tell you much.
Well, I think, they haven't had any sort of, like, alignment with him, in the backfield or anything like that.
Well, here's what I will say to you. In terms of him being an H-back or a pseudo-fullback, I'm still of the belief that Henry Yanosky is going to be on this team and that the standard NFL fullback has a place on the Giants roster. I know there are a lot of folks out there who are thinking, well, maybe they could save a roster spot. Use one of the tight ends back
actually,
there.
Actually, one of my favorite, you know, Giants is Charles Way. I get that.
Yeah, I'm still traditional fullback oriented, and I think the Giants are too.
Well, yeah, it's just that, you know, we preach, you know, competition, and, you know, when Heinicke went down a couple years ago, Connor, I think he did a
good job.
A good job.
He did.
And, you know, just, you know, having that flexibility, I wouldn't, it would be a bad situation anywhere on the football field if we said, this is our guy, no competition, this is what we're rolling with. I was just wondering.
I hear you, and I appreciate it, and I believe me, I will have my binoculars out on Cunningham. He's one of many guys I'll be looking at very carefully once they start practicing in the next couple of weeks. Thank you so much for the call. 201-939-4513. Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Coming up in about 5 minutes, we will have Larry Michael, the voice of the Washington Redskins, to preview the Giants NFC East rivals. I will just add this. If your offensive line is not the greatest in run blocking, which the Giants have not been for the last few years, you really want to have a solid blocking fullback to help fortify that situation. And until those questions are answered in terms of the Giants' ability to rely on the line to run block, it's, to me, foolishness to even consider playing a tight end in that H-back or fullback role. I just don't think that makes a lot of sense. You need as much power and physicality out of that spot as you possibly can put on the field. Henry Heinicke is the guy to do that. Quickly, let's go to another call before we get to Larry Michael. Jimmy in Toledo, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to talk to you.
Just have a quick comment on the JPP situation. I was listening to yesterday's show, and Lynn from Maryland, I think he gave it like a 10% chance that JPP would sign his tender by the start of training camp.
Jimmy, I'm going to do you a favor. I'd much rather you talk about something that's relevant, because as far as I'm concerned, Lynn's comments and his percentages came out of left field. He pulled them from Mars somewhere. I have no idea where he's coming from.
That's pretty much what I was getting at. So
there you go. Unless he's absolutely involved in the specific contract negotiations of the player, then he doesn't know anything about them and has no business putting numbers on them. So I don't know where that's coming from.
I usually agree with him, but I just wanted to get that in there.
So do I. Len's a great fan, but he's out of line on that one.
Well, hey, I'm hoping you could settle a debate for me then. Me and my friends, I'm 27, so I'm only going back about 15 years, but we always get an argument about what the worst Giants loss was. The ones that stick in my mind are the Seahawks game where Feely couldn't nail the field goal, the 49ers playoff game where they had the botched, you know, the botched field goal at the end of the game, and then the, you know, the miracle at the Meadowlands, too, with DeSean Jackson. I lean towards the 49ers game. I'll take your answer up there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much for the call, Jimmy. You know, I don't really like to relive the most dramatic failures over the last many years. I mean, remember now, I'm in my 33rd year covering this team, so I have seen numerous issues. To me, I just think that any time you lose a playoff game and then in painful fashion, like the Niner game, like the Vikings game of some years ago as well, those tend to stick with you most, because the most was on the line when the game got away. So in general, that would just be my answer. It's hard to imagine worse losses when so much is at stake. And then something slips through your fingertips. There might be other younger fans who think about the DeSean Jackson game at MetLife Stadium. Yeah, that was horrible. I get that. You'll never forget it. But it was a regular season game. You know, it wasn't a one-and-done playoff scenario where season's over. Anyway, Dean from Connecticut, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Paulie, what's going on, my man?
Hi, good to talk to you.
Hey, I just had a couple quick comments, and then I'll get to the guy who's trying to talk to. First, I noticed there's no set schedule for training camp as of yet, when do you guys plan on releasing that? With who's signing what autographs on what day?
Well, here's the thing. My understanding is that there were still some details that were being worked out and then reworked out. Usually by this time, right around this time, the official training camp schedule comes out, and then shortly afterwards, the marketing department has their promotional schedule, and then they kind of, you know, mesh those two things together, and then, of course, on Giants.com, you'll get all the information. I know that doesn't give you an answer other than to tell you this is usually the time, and no one has given me the date. I'm going to be honest with you because I'm looking forward to it, too, because you know what happens when I get the training camp schedule? I go home onto my office wall, and I paint that schedule on my wall. No, I don't really do that.
Oh,
but you know what it's like for me. I love training camp.
I think you're a little more diehard than me, P-Bad. I'm sorry to say. I think you're a little more than me.
I love training camp, and I live for training camp practices because it's all about learning what the team could be. So I want that schedule probably 10 times more than you do, and I don't have it. I don't have it, and I'm dying for it. But I do expect that it will be coming out momentarily. I know the holiday also kind of pushed things back, too. They were trying to get it out, and then the holiday came, and obviously there's something else that's going on with this team that they got to focus on, too. And so I would expect it to come out very, very shortly. The office, by the way, is closed Friday this week. There will be no Big Blue Kickoff Live, just as a heads up. It is open tomorrow. John and Lance will be doing the show. We'll be previewing the Dallas Cowboys. My suspicion or hope will be that before they break for the weekend on Friday, that they get us that schedule tomorrow. But, again, I'm making no promises because I haven't received it either.
Well, I'll just hold my breath on that one. How's that sound?
Don't hold your breath too long. You might get sick.
I might die. You know.
Don't say that.
Real quick, I'm not trying to, get any Giants fans down and optimistic, but the injury JPP has, I had when I was in the military, all right? But it wasn't fireworks. It was actually military explosives.
Well, thank you for your service, by the way, and I hope you're okay.
It took 3 years for the nerve endings and the nerves to get back to normal. I'm still not 100%. I didn't have the doctors that the New York Giants have. But I'm telling you right now, if his injury is as bad as mine, and I mean, I lost flesh. I almost lost two fingers. I'm still not right 3 years later. So whether the Giants have the most best doctors in the world and JPP recovers fast, I'm going to go on a limb and say he's not going to be ready until at least week four, week five of the regular season. I mean, that's my opinion. Because with nerve damage and loss of flesh like that, you got to worry about infection, bacterial stuff, not to mention the nerve endings. If his nerves are damaged, it's going to be a long recovery.
Well, I appreciate your story, and again, I hope by this point you're doing as well as you possibly can be. And
yes, sir.
You know, I thank you for your service and your interest, and you know, call us back again.
I definitely will, Paul. You guys have a great day.
All right, you too. Be well now. I will only mention this: there are a number of different things for different injuries, all kinds of injuries that medical specialists are able to do to get guys on the field, whether it's a soft cast, a hard cast, or orthotics for their feet, different things for their wrists and their elbows. Trust me, the medical people are very advanced in the NFL, and if there's anything that they can do to help any player who has had some type of injury, they'll work it up, and they'll dummy something up like MacGyver, you know, if they have to see if they can get that player on the field. So keep that in mind. There are a lot of ingenious inventions that could come out of unfortunate injuries with players over the course of time. I believe we have Larry Michael ready on the line. Dave, we do? That's great news. Voice of the Washington Redskins, Larry Michael. Larry, Paul Dottino with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello, and thanks so much for joining us today.
How are you doing, Paul?
Doing very well, Larry. You know, I have to tell you, we're going to be here before you know it, September 24th. Washington
You're right.
Redskins going to be here at MetLife Stadium. The calendar's going by real quick. I don't know how it is for you, but it is for me. What is your number one priority if you're the Washington Redskins going into training camp, something that's got to be tip-top shape, number one priority going into opening day and as we get into the September schedule?
Well, I mean, that's an easy one, Paul.
I know it is, but I'm asking you anyway.
Here.
Nah.
I mean, that's an easy one. Quarterback situation is always number one. And, you know, the team has done a lot to try to improve itself in a lot of areas. And the one thing, you know, you guys being in New York, you got Philly, Dallas. In this division, everybody knows everybody else's talent. Everybody knows everybody else's keys to the season. Yeah, there's injuries you need to overcome in this position, that position. But there's no secrets in the NFC East.
Right.
And for the Redskins, I think it is no secret. The performance at the quarterback position this year is going to be paramount. Last year, in fact, you had three different players started quarterback for the Redskins. And they put up, if you combine the numbers, you had the second most yardage passing in team history, but the result obviously wasn't what you're looking for, you know, losing record. So, you know, Robert's been here every day. He's been working hard. He's healthy. And another season with the, you know, offense. You've got a quarterback coach in Matt Kavanaugh who's very well known, very well respected, who's new this year. And, you know, but it's all going to come around to his performance. And, you know, they did invest in the offensive line, no doubt about it. I think the team's going to be better. It's got better talent. But if you're looking at that one element that has to succeed this year for this team to succeed, I think it's the quarterback position. I mean, I think you could probably say that about all these teams in the NFC East, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I grooved that one for you, Larry. But, you know, the thing that Giants fans are most disgusted about, I think, is that Brandon Scherff, the lineman from Iowa, was plucked by the Redskins before the Giants had an opportunity to take him off the draft board. But I guess we should have known that because the Skins were clearly addressing their offensive line going into the spring, and it looks as though that they've certainly fortified it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And this kid looks like you know, a guy that's ready to play. A big guy, got the tools, good feet, tremendous work ethic, and a mature individual. So he looks like a guy that you're going to be able to put in there right away, and he'll succeed. But the one factor you have to think about when you're thinking about this organization this year is the new general manager, Scott McLuhan, who has already put his stamp on the team. He said he wanted bigger players, wanted to get bigger up front, and he has done so. And the roster is certainly going to look different. You've got 10 draft picks, got a handful of free agents, you got a handful of undrafted free agents. So there's going to be some unfamiliar faces on the field for the Redskins this year around the NFC East. And it's because of Scott McLuhan. He was brought in here to change the direction, and I think he's done so. And Brandon Scherff is, you know, I don't think that was a big shocker. And year after year, you know, it's kind of funny, year after year, Redskins fans have just kind of, every year I do these TV shows and the radio and everything, and everybody, what's the biggest thing they need to do during the offseason? Bolster the offensive line. This year they did. This year they did with that first-round pick. And another gentleman who didn't get a chance to play last year, a fourth-round pick out of Nebraska, Spencer Long, is penciled in to start at the right guard position. So the right side of the Redskins offensive line, albeit very inexperienced, we'll have a couple, you know, kind of big studly guys up there, a lot bigger than, you know, their predecessors, and hopefully, obviously, for the franchise, a lot better as well.
Well, that's a lot of beef for Alfred Morris to run behind, for sure. Let me flop at the defense, Larry. I don't know how much time you have. We're certainly running out here. Hatcher, Knighton, got a couple of guys who have been with winning programs, veterans who have a pretty darn good resume, also added to this D. We know what Ryan Kerrigan can do. God knows he's had some real big games against the Giants over the years. How much better do you think the D is going to be?
Well, it better be better. It better be better. And then that goes back, you know, your quarterback, you say you're going to hang it all on your quarterback, but if you're playing from behind every game, it doesn't help your quarterback any. So the defensive line, to me, has had the biggest influx of talent of any position on the roster. You're going to have a couple new starters, Stephen Paya and Pot Roast, Terrence Knighton. Got a couple other guys that have been brought in, Ricky Jean-Francois. So the defensive line's going to look different. And, of course, you got a different defensive coordinator in there in Joe Barry, who, you know, they're preaching that this is going to be more of an aggressive defense rather than a, you know, kind of a read-and-react defense. You know, the predecessor, Jim Haslett, employed that. So I think the defensive line is something that's much improved. Kerrigan had a knee scope several weeks ago. The guy's a workout warrior. I've got no worries about him. And
right.
the second year, and Trent Murphy out of Stanford looks to have improved dramatically in terms of his strength and his comfort level. And they drafted Preston Smith in the second round, a jack-of-all-trades type of kid out of Mississippi State, who was very impressive during the OTAs and during the mini camp. But, you know, we've got 21 days from tomorrow that training camp begins in Richmond. And you're right, the summer has flown by. And before you know it, they're going to tee it up. So you know what they say? No turning back now.
Oh, that's for sure. It is full speed ahead. So the Giants will play the Redskins in week number three. There's certainly some things that, as you said, with the young offensive linemen who are going to try to get their act together as quickly as possible. I'm going to ask you if you can put on the opponent's hat for a second. Is week three a good time for the Giants to play a Washington Redskins team that may still be trying to find its way a little bit, or do you not see that being an issue?
I have quit trying to predict this kind of stuff. You know, I look at these games, I can give you so much evidence of a game that went this way, a game that went that way, and I've seen the Giants beat up on the Redskins enough over the years to know what has to happen when these two teams meet. I will put my Redskins hat back on and take a look at a Giant team that, you know, for years, you know, the defensive line, the pressure put on that offensive line by the Giants' defensive front has always been something that has been problematic. And I really don't know what that's going to be like this year. And you've got the injury to JPP, so you don't know what's going to happen there. And the offensive line of the Giants, I guess, is being retooled as well.
Yeah.
So I see this as a very competitive matchup. And I, you know, a lot of people like to bury the Redskins and Giants. So, well, you know, Philly and Dallas might be the leaders in the division. But, again, I've learned that you cannot predict it year to year. You know, I think Dallas last year, you know, they're missing their best player and their running back who's now in Philadelphia. How's he going to fit in over there? There's a lot of variables here. But if Eli Manning performs and you've got the two healthy wide receivers, it's a very formidable offense again for the New York Giants. So, you know, I think no time is a good time to play an NFC East team, but I love it. I love it when you get down into December. If these teams were all about equal going into December, the way they've scheduled these games makes it very, very dramatic for the fans. And I mean, my hope is, obviously, hometown guy here, hope the Redskins are in the mix so that those ball games in December, you know, when the Redskins and the Giants, you know, play each other and the Eagles, and I guess it's November, the end of November, the second Giant-Redskin game takes place. But if you're in the running in the last 5 weeks of the season, then it's going to be real exciting.
And that's interesting to me, Larry. You bring up the schedule, and you know, for the Giants, they're done with Dallas by the time you get to Halloween. They're done with Washington after that November 29th game, right around Thanksgiving. The last month of the season, it's the Jets, Miami, Carolina, Minnesota. They're away from the NFC East. They're done with their business until they close out against the Philadelphia Eagles. And I can't remember exactly in recent memory what the Redskins schedule has been like, but for the Giants, it seems as though they've had a lot of Decembers with tough, physical, nasty NFC East games that have just beat the stuffing out of you. And if you're trying to climb uphill, that is not the place to do it.
And yeah, you're right. And, you know, for the Redskins, four of the last six are against the NFC East, which is incredible. And sandwich a trip to Chicago on December 13th, and nobody wants to go to Chicago in December. And, you know, again, looking at this Redskins schedule, if they're, you know, again, it's going to be tough to be there, but if you're in any kind of contention going into the last 6 weeks of the year, you know, you're playing the teams you got to beat. So it's there's something like, I think the NFL likes doing that. Sometimes it just doesn't work out, though. So, hey, we'll look forward to our trip up to New York, and we, you know, obviously, I think when you look at the pecking order in these rivalries in the NFC East, each one of them is a little different for Redskins fans, as I'm sure it is for the Giant fans as well.
Sure, good stuff, Larry Michael, voice of the Washington Redskins. Thank you so much for taking some time today.
All right, Paul, talk to you soon.
All right, we'll see you during the season. We got a couple more minutes left here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Very quickly, I believe, is that Jimmy in Long Island, Dave? Let's try to get to these last couple of phone calls. These Giants fans have been holding on. You're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, how are you, Paul?
Very good, thank you.
How are you today?
Hey, great to have you dial up. Appreciate it.
What I wanted to speak about today, if you don't mind, this Will Beatty, great ball player. Everybody's saying, what, 5 to 6 months for him to heal up?
Well, he told me he's hoping to push it up a little bit. They originally told him maybe sometime to early, mid-November. He's thinking maybe the end of October. He'd like to be a little bit quicker than the doctors have told him.
All right, so I'm doing some calculating over here. I know he got hurt May 11th when it was a surgery. So I'm trying to be – I know a lot of guys call in a gloom and doom, and they look at a lot of the negatives, so I'm trying to be positive over here.
Okay.
Is there any way, shape, or form he can heal – let's say the allocated time of 5 months would bring him to, like, the first week in September. Am I right?
Yeah, but I don't think anybody's thinking he can be ready in September. Again, he's trying to be optimistic, and he's telling me maybe around Halloween. You know, he wants to push their schedule up by a couple of weeks. He's not talking a couple of months here.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, so you know, that's serious stuff.
I guess 7th or 8th week of the season.
I've seen the scar. It's nasty.
Really?
But you know what? He's going to work his butt off to get back as soon as he can. You got to figure it's realistic for him to start the season on PUP anyway. You know, which is going to eliminate him for the first 6 weeks regardless.
Well, I'm going to try to be positive. And Jimmy from Long Island saying it will be. He's going to make a speedy recovery.
All right, Jimmy.
I can see him there in the third or fourth week of the season.
Good stuff. Thank you for your call. Please call again. Jerome from Charlotte, you're last on the program. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? I'm just, you know, trying to follow up on JPP with – unfortunate injury. I can't, you know, I'm still trying to believe it, you know. But has they been saying anything about him being ready for first game or?
No, sir. There has been no official announcement from the organization as to what happened or his status or his future. And as soon as that comes out, I know the folks here at Giants.com will post that up in a millisecond on the website. So I certainly invite you to stay tuned to that. Appreciate the phone call.
And also,
yes, sir.
I know that the NFL have been trying to put, you know, certain players on the restrictions in the contract. They can't do this, they can't do that, you know, like ride motorcycles with
extracurricular activities. Right, extracurricular recreational activities.
Be looking into?
I don't know. Thanks for the call. I don't know that, but there are recreational activities. Like, I'm sure that their player is not allowed to bungee jump off a bridge. Guys aren't allowed to skydive. Some guys, I believe, in their contracts, like Ben Roethlisberger, had a motorcycle accident one time. I think his renewed contract, I think, says he can't ride motorcycles. You know, there are recreational activities that are rather dangerous that get put into clauses in contracts that say, hey, player cannot do this, player cannot do that. It does happen. Hey, folks, it's been a great hour. Appreciate your time. Remember to join us here Monday through Friday. Usually it'll be Friday off this week here on Big Blue Kickoff Live as the Giants prepare for the final weeks leading into training camp. Tomorrow it'll be John Schmelk and Lance Meadow. They'll be previewing the Giants and Dallas Cowboys for the upcoming season. Write down the number, 201-939-4513. For now, this is Paul Tatino. So long, everybody.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broken, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.